session number 4296, reel 7.
Mrs. Rzeszowski, tape 7. Are there any other events you could describe for us?
One thing which was a great comfort right at the beginning when we were still all in a very desperate mood, we owe to the Methodist vicar or rector, I don't know what to call him, I'm not quite sure how it came about, possibly through the head representative of the A district who played the organ. And she may have contacted him in order to play the organ. Anyway, in the Methodist church, they arranged for musical evenings where we sang, obviously, some hymns, but not only hymns, and where we also had solo performances by some people who were able to had a sufficiently high standard to produce themselves. That was very, very nice and a great comfort.
And did the Jewish ladies go to the religious Jewish ladies?
Oh yes, they went. Everybody went. Yes.
Did you have a cinema or theatre?
No. No, there was no cinema. And theatre, well, I mean, we had improvised stage to begin with, and I dare say there must have been halls with, probably the church halls would have had stages. That's right, the Everyman performance was in one of the church halls. But otherwise, it was all homemade, as it were, entertainment.
Did you have any dances or socials?
We certainly didn't have dances. I believe we didn't even have a folk dance group. That's really an omission. We should have had that. But to begin with, we were not supposed to visit each other's houses, so that would have made things very difficult. Also, of course, there was a curfew at 8 o'clock. And a couple of police women patrolled the streets to see that nobody was outside.
Was there any mixing with the men of the island? Did you find the young girls sort of made the
Yes, they did. That's inevitable. But I don't think there was a lot of that. And also, it was a bit difficult because of the curfew. Well, I mean, you can presumably have illicit relations outside, within curfew hours, and I mean, in daylight. But I believe there was a certain amount of that. It's only, some of the girls we had were not very savory. That is inevitable. I mean, in amongst 4,500 women, caught, as it were, at random, you find, obviously, some who are not very nice and some who are downright bad. That's inevitable.
Did you have any sexual problems to deal with as a representative?
No.
Were the islanders involved in any of your activities at all?
Well, they were invited to these performances, and I dare say some did come. Quite frankly, I don't know. Some of them were very, very friendly with some of the internees. Some were very nasty, and I don't think there was much official contact, but there certainly was quite a lot of unofficial contact. I mean, the internees supplied a source of domestic service, and also other things later on, and so the service exchange, the dressmaking and all that sort of thing was also used to a certain extent by the indigenous population.
Would you say that the authorities encouraged your activities? What was their attitude towards them?
I think they were very helpful. In some instances it took some doing, but eventually I think we persuaded them, and because a lot of the things we did could not have been accomplished without the active cooperation of the camp authorities. There is a funny incident which I would like to mention. I discovered on the Isle of Man quite near relatives. Cousin of my mother's, who was married to the boss of a rather internationally connected business. They had emigrated fairly early and were able to take out a lot of their money. And they were domiciled on the Isle of Man, I presume for tax reasons. And since the Isle of Man does not belong to the jurisdiction of the British law, they were not interned, but they put themselves voluntarily under the camp authorities because they didn't want to create a bad impression or so. And their eldest daughter, who is exactly one day younger than me, and her husband and her two children also had lived just outside Port Erin and moved into Port Erin inside the perimeter of the barbed wire voluntarily and submitted to all the restrictions of the internees. And I heard that they were there, since these relatives had lived in Berlin and we lived in Breslau. I had never met them before. So I wrote a little note to my aunt and asked whether I could pay her a visit, and she reacted very, very friendly and very cordially, and we became very great friends.
Oh, that must have been so nice for you to have someone on the island. You said earlier on that you weren't religious, that you're not religious. Did you find that you had a greater need while you were on the island for religion?
I personally don't. Yeah. No, that doesn't make any difference to me. I know of some Jewish people who, as a consequence or as a reaction against the Nazi persecution, suddenly discovered their religiosity and their Jewish faith. But I myself am completely atheist.
Could we get on to education now? We're very interested to find out about the schools. First of all, for adults, what was available?
Oh, for adults, we organized classes. At my hotel, for instance, we started immediately with French classes. This Belgian woman was quite willing to teach a group. And took place inside the hotel was, to begin with, a great advantage because, as I already mentioned, we were at the beginning not supposed to visit each other's houses. But very soon, a number of people offered their services in all sorts of classes. Intellectual languages, obviously, I remember that I took Spanish classes. There was a young woman who was a native of Mexico, New Mexico. I think it belongs to the United States. I'm not quite sure about my geography. But she taught Spanish, obviously French. Then a great deal of English for foreigners, because many of the internees were not able to speak English. I remember that I taught some of the a bit more primitive internees, the rudiments of arithmetic. I taught them how to say to measure up a room if they wanted to buy a carpet or paper their walls and things like this. Really very primitive arithmetic. That went very well. I had very large classes. And then there were lectures. Some of the people were philosophically minded. There were lectures on all sorts of topics. It really developed like an ILEA evening institute, except that it took place in the daytime. And then there were the more practical things, dressmaking and so on. For instance, my friend Friedel Meyer, whom I mentioned already, she had been second in command at the Jersey Company. She was a dressmaker, cutter and designer, and she got huge bales of material from her company and taught dressmaking to some of the girls, and she provided the material. I remember sewing a very, very beautiful dress for myself under her direction. Well, that was not quite so official, but the other classes, lectures, discussion groups, there was a great deal of that sort of thing going on.
What was the relationship between these classes and the service exchange?
There was no, strictly speaking, no relation.
It was quite a separate thing.
That was quite separate, although I dare say there was quite a bit of duplication of personnel. It's always the same people who do the few things, and the others
make passive use of it. And could anyone go to the classes?
Anybody.
Or did you have to pay?
No.
And how did you cope regarding materials? For instance, you mentioned the material this friend of yours bought from her factory.
No, she didn't buy it. She was sent.
She was sent it free.
It was a gift from the Jersey company.
Yes.
Jersey is a beautiful material. No, what material we needed, we had to buy, obviously, and that was one of the difficulties because some people had quite a lot of money and. But they weren't allowed to use more than a certain amount, and that's where the service exchange came in, that you got things for free, in theory, because you offered other services instead, and it, just to facilitate the exchange, these services, token money was introduced.
And how about the situation regarding books for the more academic courses?
Well, I don't know where the books came from, but we had a very extensive library. And I would like to mention to you our librarian, who was a very, very nice girl. She had been in a German concentration camp. She had been an active trade unionist. Whether she had been a communist, I don't know. But she was badly scarred. And I remember her particularly well for two reasons. One, that when my little daughter was on the Isle of Man, she was at that time 10 years, but she was very, very small, and she still remembers with a great feeling of hurt that she was offered the Tales of Peter Rabbit by this librarian. And that offended her very much. The other reason is that I had, on behalf of this girl, later on a correspondence with the secretary of Eleanor Rathbone, because she had great difficulties in being released, and she was a very difficult person to talk to by anybody in official position, And I still remember writing this to Miss Vera Craig, that was the Eliana Ratzborn's secretary. Any official was like she acted like a bull to a red rag because she had had such very bad experiences in Germany. And I dare say there were quite a number of refugees, Jewish refugees, who had the same attitude, and the British officials reacted badly to that. And she had great difficulties in being released, but eventually she was released. And she was a marvelous librarian. And she, I don't think she had ever anything to do with books before. I don't know what her profession was in Germany. I don't think she had a profession. I think she was a working class girl. But she was marvelous. Where the books came from, I don't know. They were presumably donated, and this is one of the things where the camp authorities' cooperation came in, I suppose.
It was your own library, was it?
Well, it was a library for the internees, yes.
And where did you hold the classes?
The classes, to begin with, were held in the various hotels and in church halls, which were put at our disposal by Mr. Harrison, the Methodist preacher, and presumably also by the Protestant priest. I don't have much recollection of him. I don't think he played quite the same role as his Methodist priest, who was really very, very sympathetic. And he understood that there is a difference between a German and a Nazi, and particularly between a German Jew and a Nazi, which was a camp commandant. Dame Joanna had great difficulties in grasping.
Could I ask you now about the children's education, please? Because I believe you had something to do with this.
Well, in the end, I had something to do with it. We had quite a number of children of all age groups, and it became very soon apparent that some schooling was needed. And now this is a thing where Dame Joanna was very helpful. Whenever children were concerned, she would be helpful. And so camp school, I think there must have been a school building of some sort, because it was definitely a separate building where the school classes were held. And the little ones were mainly taught by one or two of the German sisters. I believe I've mentioned that the sisters of the German hospital were interned as a group, and they stayed all at the same hotel. There were some awfully nice women, and some of them apparently were trained teachers, and luckily they took over the little ones, because it's very difficult for amateurs to teach the little ones. And for the rest, there were volunteers, and one had to group the children together as best one could. Obviously the classes were reasonably large, and Minna Specht, was after all a professional headmistress, was headmistress of the school, and I taught one or two subjects. As far as I remember, I taught French and technical drawing, of all things, and I had, in this class of technical drawings, I had a girl who was an excellent technical draftsman, would have made. And they were very, very interested. Of course, materials were, to begin with, difficult, but there again, through the good offices of Dame Joanna, we did get the most necessary materials, crayons and exercise books and possibly blackboards, and I don't know.
Did the British authorities take any interest in this?
Well, through Dame Joanna, yes. Later on, they took an active interest. When Minna Specht was released, I was put in charge on her recommendation. She had been not only the headmistress of the camp school, but she was also one of the head representatives. The four of us obviously got to know each other quite well. And so she suggested that I should take over the administration of the camp school. And I did that for a little while. And then the Home Office, I think it was the Home Office, or possibly the Ministry of Education, anyway, some very high-placed people thought something ought to be done about the camp school. And a woman came to take it over who was an exponent of some method which was applied mainly to children who for some reason or other couldn't go to school. She may have been Australian, I don't know, but it was a method by which the parents could teach their children in an approved way. And it was thought that this might be a good way to teach these very mixed classes of children at the camp school. And so she took over, and I then relinquished the headmastership of the camp school. That was fairly shortly after before the camp was altogether dissolved. So it must have been in the late summer 42.
But while you were in charge, could you sort of describe a typical day the children might have in school? What sort of lessons would they
have? Well, they had the usual lessons, except that it was a bit difficult because you had various age groups together in one class, which may or may not be a bad thing. I don't know. I mean, the old village school used to work on that principle. No, what I found was very difficult, that some of these children were very, very highly disturbed. In particularly, I remember two boys of about 13 years of age, which is at the best of times a difficult age for boys. And they had not been in the same place for longer than perhaps 6 weeks for the last 2 years. They had emigrated with their parents, say, to France, and then they were shifted from one place to the other, and then they came to England and partly separated from their parents, and eventually they didn't know where their fathers were, they were there with their mothers. That was very, very difficult, and I don't think I would have had the methodical equipment, the mental equipment to deal with these boys in the right way. They were very difficult to deal with. They were highly intelligent, which made it worse.
Did you have any support in that direction? You know, was there any psychiatrists on the island?
No, there were no psychiatrists. No. I think, you know, it's so long ago. They were invented, but they weren't as thick on the ground as they are nowadays. You forget that.
Yes, that's quite true.
Yeah.
But I wondered, you know, with a German population, whether there would have been anyone.
Well, I'm sure there were psychoanalysts amongst the refugees, but I wouldn't have known. I never made use of that sort of thing.
And did you see any progress with these disturbed children? Do you think you were able to help them?
I think, going to school regularly and being fed regularly must have had a certain amount of influence on them. But I know in the Baycliffe Hotel where I stayed late after the I had to leave the golf links, there was one mother with one of these boys, and it was pitiable. The woman didn't know how to deal with her boy, and I think he was quite happy at school where he had a little playmate of his same age, and they were a pair of devils, but nothing really bad happened. I think possibly, regularity is always a good thing, I think.
Did they have art lessons? drawing, painting?
I believe they had. I'm almost sure they had.
And they would have had games, I suppose, would they?
I don't think they had much organized games. They may have had football. I really don't. Probably.
And would they have used the beaches for, say, swimming?
Oh, they
lessons?
Would have used the beaches in any case. The beaches were open and free. And the first year, the first summer was such a marvelous summer that nobody wanted anything else but the beach and the water. The second summer was miserable, cold and nasty. Oh, and the first winter was terrible, very, very high snow drifts. We had to dig out the doors and sometimes the windows of the ground floor. Oh, it was marvelous. And of course, the promenade was out of bounds because the wind was so strong that it wouldn't have been safe to be on the promenade. Now, the winter, of course, that was quite a problem because we had the whole population was congregated in the lounges, and there was one miserable fire. Everybody tried to be as near the fire as possible. Gradually, the rooms get warm with 120 people, even distributed over two big lounges. They do get warm, but it wasn't terribly comfortable. Did I mention the hot water bottles?
Yes, you did mention earlier on that you were saved by your hot water bottles. What did you personally think, this is going back to the school, of the standards you obtained?
I think they were fairly high. I think they aimed at, we had a couple of 16-year-old girls. The boys at that age were taken to the men's camp. And they aimed at A-levels. It wasn't called A-levels then.
But the higher school certificate it would have
yes,
been.
Yes, I suppose so, yes.
And did they take examinations on the island?
Not
were
on the island,
to?
No.
Did you have any visits from inspectors, school inspectors, apart from this?
We didn't have visits from school inspectors as far as I know. There may have been some whilst Minna Specht was in charge. But we had other visitors, of course.
To the school?
No, not only, to the school as well as to the camp generally.
Yes, who would have visited the school?
I dare say anybody who came from the home office or from the MPs who were interested, Leonor Rathbone and some other, I believe the Bishop of Chichester visited, and I dare say they would have looked at the school. But I have no positive knowledge of it. It is, of course, quite inconceivable that these children should not have had some sort of schooling. The internment started, nobody knew how long it was going on. You cannot let children run wild without proper schooling.